Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
We are going to overtime!
The goals keep coming for the number one offensive team in the NHL. Welcome in. When you're serious about the game, bet on Buffalo. At the only sports books in Western New York, Seneca Resorts and Casinos betting counters are open daily and self-service betting kiosks available 24/7 at all three locations. Whether you visit Seneca Niagara, Allegheny, or Buffalo Creek, the Sports Lounge features the latest lines and multiple screens so you never miss a play. The Sportsbook at Seneca Resorts and Casinos, where the love of the game meets the thrill of the win, Marty, and they have been winning on this trip. What is the common denominator to their success?
Well, we asked a question on Sabres Live this week. Do you want 4+ goals or 3 or less? And it's the 4+, right? That's the common denominator, being able to get some offense. And look, yes, you had the game against Colorado where the shot attempt were completely in the Avalanche side. But the fact that the Sabres have had control of the play for the major part the last few games, their forwards hang on to pucks, they create some offense. To me, that's the big one. So the over, let's just say, has been cashing in a little bit more often, and that's great to see. Oh, and by the way, Duffer, I know this because you mentioned the sports book at Seneca Resorts and Casino and all of that. I'm trying to figure out what's the worst beat, right? You know, like when you think you've got to win and boom, it comes down. Anybody that had the Patriots or the spread in the game and then they decide to do the backwards, you know, passes and then the Raiders catch it and go and win the game, that's a terrible beat. Or if you're a Bills fan and you bet the -6.5 and you see Devin Singletary take a knee at the 3 because he would have put the Bills up 7, you would have been Bills win and covered the spread, but took a knee. So anyway, I had a few friends that are in the, you know, putting a few dollars out there, and my phone was blowing up last night and today because of that situation alone. So a couple of bad beats. I'm saying just stick to hockey or don't bet at all. That's usually going to make you a lot happy, but we don't want to say that. Put a few money because Seneca loves it when you do it.
Well, the Sabres are up to 3.97 goals per game. If you're looking for a reference point as far as what to expect from them on any given night, I think it's been a while since I used this phrase, or we used this phrase. But maybe now is the time to do it. Where are we seeing the Granato effect the most?
Oh, the depth that the Sabres are showing right now. Being able to have moved Tyson Jost and Peyton Krebs and switch those two, I think that is one way that I can tell the Granato effect. The decision to switch a couple of players in the lineup made a big impact. It made a big impact on Peyton Krebs, and it actually helped Olofsson and now Mittelstadt, which moved back and forth with Skinner's suspension. Mm-hmm. But Tyson Jost looks really good on that line. So I think the Granato effect for me had the biggest impact up front. Now, I understand people are going to say, well, look at all, they're winning with all their defense hurt, right? Power, Jokiarju, Lyubushkin, Bryson. I get that. I still think, number one, Dahlin and Samuelsson and Cale Clegg are doing a masterful job with their ice time. But I still think it's the forward that are helping this group of defense playing the way they are. So for me, it's the ability to be able to switch a couple of players and have now the depth. And maybe it's not in scoring often, but it's the 1-2-3-4, 1-2-3-4. You can rely on every line to get the job done.
Yeah, he's also maximizing his best players. So
oh, yeah.
Wouldn't that be like kind of the one place to start? I mean, I don't know.
He's got a great feel for the game, Duffer. He's got a really good feel for the game because as you said that, I'm thinking post-game Arizona, he says the Cousins line really didn't have their game. Mm-hmm. And I took some time away from them and gave it to Thompson, right? He didn't give it to Jost or Krebs. He gave it to Thompson. Why? Because that's like you just said, utilizing your best asset, your best players.
Yeah, I think it's impossible to ignore this. I mean, and hopefully they are forever linked and Tage Thompson has this incredible career as an elite point producer and goal scorer. And it should always go back to Don's moving of him to the middle and belief in him. But I think I'm looking at it as much now, which sounds ridiculous because it's only the second season of Tage, if you will. But I'm seeing it more pronounced, this Granato effect in Skinner and Tuck.
Yeah. Yeah. I think,
and I'm at the point now where, like, is Jeff Skinner in fact a different player?
100%.
Or is it just a window that he's in and he'll always be Jeff Skinner?
No. Jeff Skinner will always have his root, right? As the type of player that he is. But he's added different layers to his game now. And I think, number one, yes, big props to Granato. And look, it's been well documented. We don't have to, you know, go on. But Jeff Skinner under Ralph Kruger was a 7-goal in 53 games, 14 goals in 59 games coming off a 40-goal season, right? Mm-hmm. It was a big drop-off. And some players have a comfort level with certain coaches and communication level that works and or doesn't work. I can tell you this. I mean, I didn't have it with Alain Vigneault, and I've said it on this show many times. It just wasn't clicking.
Right.
And it didn't click between Skinner and Kruger, but it did click with Granato and a lot of players. And I watched Jeff Skinner, especially against Arizona, coming back from a 3-game suspension, not – like he said, he skated so hard during, like, Matty Ellis and the assistant coaches worked him. Like Skinner, for me in the past, it would have been, okay, I'll practice, but I'm suspended and I'm a player that either I scored 40 or scored 37 or whatnot. Like, I'm not going to give a full extra on the days that I, you know, I'm suspended. No, but he actually made a point to thank the assistant coaches for what he did. I think that's I almost feel like that's a different Jeff Skinner, attitude-wise, character-wise, culture-wise. Like, his skill set's still the same. Mm-hmm. His skill set's a guy that deflections, rebounds, greasy goal, let's get on it. But I think his attitude is just, like, one that just wants to work harder, harder, harder. And that was never the case before. Mm-hmm. Maybe it was, but I didn't see it before, right? It didn't show that way before.
Right, and he's still never made it to the Stanley Cup playoffs. So That's where a lot of players get identified as, you know, where can they take their attributes and how can they put them on display even more at the most critical time. So with Tuck, it's, you know, Tuck had the good fortune of seeing a lot of playoff time early on in his career.
Yeah,
but now it's almost like a weekly thing that the coach is pushing for more and more and more, but not in a, you know, old school. I mean, it's positive reinforcement, belief, get out there. You can do this. And not unlike Skinner, I feel like Tuck is maybe now recognizing how much he can singularly, but within his group line mates, impact the game.
Okay, so no disrespect to Ryan O'Reilly, because I think Ryan O'Reilly did so many really, really good things here in Buffalo, and they talked about his influence and post-practice drills and all of that. But I feel like after 3 months, like, that's where it stopped. Not where it stopped, but there was no other level, right? Like, it's like, oh, let's work on our skills on the ice, and let's keep working, let's be honest with ourselves to a point where, like, Ryan was a little too honest, but that was him, right? But with Tuck last year, when he got on the ice, even though he was still injured and recovering from his off-season surgery, mm-hmm. I was like, wow, like, I haven't seen a guy practice like that in Buffalo in a long time. How hard he was going on every drills, shooting to score on every drills, and everybody took that next level. Mm-hmm. And the team joined in with Alex Tuck to practice and have those habits elevated. But I feel like with Alex Tuck, it hasn't just stopped there. It went into, let's practice to a certain level, and then let's also have this connection with the fans to a certain level. Let's also have this connection with our coaching staff to another level. Let's connection with the trainers, the equipment managers to another level, mm-hmm. the employee arenas. Like, everybody I talk to are like, man, this Alex Tuck guy, like, he's just unbelievable. It doesn't stop in one step. And that's the leadership I feel that has been great. And it's been great from Kalaposo. It's been great from Zemgus Girgensen. It's been great from everybody. But where I saw the first step of Alex Tuck was in practice last year, and it's led to 5 or 6 steps later. It hasn't stopped at step one. Like, it keeps going. And it may just change. It evolves. It changes. I absolutely think that. And you see it. When Alex is disappointed in his game, you see it. And it doesn't have to be like beating himself down, but you see it. And when he's excited about a win, you see it. Like, that's real. And I love it.
So you're with me though on this, right? Like, the coach is having a big role in this.
Absolutely. So absolutely. Then... And you know what the big role of Donnie this year was? Well, let's start Skinner and Thompson together, and we're going to move Tuck around, and we're going to see if we can get that didn't take long to say, hey, no, I need to have Tuck with Thompson and Skinner, because they're our guys. They're now, we talked about a duo. Now they're a trio. Like, they're a line, and they stay together.
So what is it doing for the rest of the group? This is where your personal experience has to come in, because sometimes coaches are really, really hard on the top players. And then there's this approach from Don, because, like, let's be honest here. It's not like they're top of the division, right? They're still growing. They're still a long ways from where they want to be. So that means nothing is perfect or even close to it, but it's just the approach. I'm just wondering how it affects the other guys when they see a coach that expects even more, but not in a negative way. I don't know if I'm phrasing it the right way.
Yeah, you're phrasing perfectly right, Duffer. And I know exactly where you're going. And I'll tell you this, okay? Going back to 05, 06, and I know this is like my era of good Buffalo Sabres, right? Those 2 years before I got traded, you had a coach, Lindy Ruff, where a couple of years before was kind of losing the feel, right? Like, he was hard on Miro Shetan, and man, was he hard on Alex Kolalik, and was he hard on Dmitry Kalin, and you didn't have a player or two or three players to be able to connect Lindy with the room. Like, it was Lindy, like, oh, I want to shake all of you guys, and I want to make you go the way that, and then Drury came along, and then Briere came along, and man, did that make a big difference? Just Chris Drury made a huge difference, and Danny made a huge difference as well. But all of a sudden, Lindy had this different way of communicating with the players, this different way of approaching the players, of talking to them. And there was this maybe buffer zone in between the two of them. And right now, Don Granato is a completely different person. But there's times where you need still that buffer, and you need that Alex Tuck that is like, hey, guys, like, I've seen this before, and I've seen it from a different place. And so a lot of fans are going to say, well, this team has been drafting first overall for 5 years. Like, okay, let's take the Oilers, for example, right? Like, they went through coaches and coaches and coaches. And sometimes it's not just the coach. Sometimes it's who's there as a leader to be able to connect the coach with the players. And if you don't have that connection, well, the pieces won't fit. And it won't go forward. Even though you're bringing young players and star players, well, you don't have somebody to lean on in the locker room. And right now, the difference between probably this year and last year to maybe 5 years ago is I really feel like you have that connection and that buffer and those players that can put it together between the coaches and the locker room. Because now you got Peterka and Quinn and Cousins that are and to a certain extent, Samuelson's still very young, and Dahlin and Power are still young. Mm-hmm. And they're looking at Tuck, and they're looking at Skinner in a different way. Just like Pominville and Roy and Vanek and Miller and Brian Campbell looked at Lindy in a different way. And they looked at Drury and Briere in a different way. That's the way you move forward. And I know it's a long-winded answer, but it's so important. And I love that you're pointing that out, because that makes the difference.
Well, and the difference with Don, of course, is that it's taken him a long time to get to this point, right? As a head coach in the NHL, it's not like he's had experiences and he's, you know, recreating something that worked at the NHL level before. He's doing it his way, and he's as advertised. Like, I think back to, you know, Kevin Adams going through the interview process, right? And like, I know how negative people were. It's like, oh my God, they're just going to bring in a guy who's already on board for a few games. He's been an assistant coach. Yeah. Like, why don't they, you know, but like everything we're seeing from Don now, is that not exactly what Kevin learned and sought and felt like was absolutely needed for this group?
Yeah. And you're thinking exactly the same way I'm thinking. As you're mentioning Don, I'm thinking, how about when the job wasn't his? The job was still his to be earning and to be to interview and to win the job, right? And I'm like, okay, so how do you use that personal experience as a coach and connect with your players, right? So you connect with Peyton Krebs and you say, hey, you know what? You've been watching the game from the press box for the last two or three games. And now I want you to go and show me what you've been able to learn and earn your ice time and go. And not that Don Granato, I don't think would go out and say, look at me when I was wanting this job and I didn't, they didn't give it to me. I had to go back and earn it. I had to go back and interview. I had to go back and really put myself on the line. And I probably could have gone interviews anywhere else. I put all my eggs in this basket. I wanted this job. And that, I think, is something that in some way you can use to have this connection with your players. That Quinn's sitting out, right? And now, unfortunately, it's Asplund and Hinostroza that maybe not fair for them, but you got players that are coming back and you're sitting out. But at the same time, you're like, hey, I've been there too. Mm-hmm. And I like started at the bottom and I worked my way up. I think that connection works like marvels for players too.
So how is that working on the blue line right now with four of the original six from the start of the season, not in the mix? Now Lyubushkin is expected back on Monday against Vegas. But you know, you're still dealing with Joki Haru, Power and Bryson out of the mix.
Yeah. And against Arizona at 5-on-5 or even strength, because there was some 4-on-4, but I think Kell Clegg had the most time on ice at even strength. Like, I know that Samuelson and then Dahlin came in over Kell because there was power plays and penalty kills. But to me, this is, again, another Granato and his coaching staff effect of saying, hey, we're going to call up Kell Clegg. And then you see him play well in one game and you say, hey, we got to rely on him. Like, we are like struggling with our health on defense, and we got to rely on players that we feel can get the job done and have a connection. And they did. Is this the perfect scenario? No, you want to stay healthy. And I feel that my initial reaction is, oh, Lyubushkin may be back on Monday, so he'll fit in right in and probably going to have to play 20 minutes. Timeout. Like, that's not as easy as it comes, right? Like, Ilya's going to have to earn those 20 minutes if it's going to get there, because Clegg has played well and Fitzgerald has played well. And then at times, Pilot or in the last game, Davies, like, they had their moments and whatnot. So you can't just expect Lyubushkin to come in and play 20 minutes and do well. Or if and when Joki Haru or Power comes back, like, there's still going to be this earn it. And that, to me, is what the defense is doing right now. Samuelson is earning it. He played more than Dahlin against Colorado. He earned it, and he should have played more. And that's great when you earn it and you get rewarded that way.
You know, I mentioned to you on the post game after the win over Arizona that Fitzgerald played 7.5 minutes at shorthanded time on ice. That was almost twice what he has ever played shorthanded in a game this year. And interestingly, Jack Quinn was one of the higher forwards as well at over 4 minutes. And both Fitzgerald and Quinn were on the ice when Arizona scored the first goal of the game, which was a power play goal. And obviously not necessarily their fault. But the point is, it didn't change the coach's approach. It's like, I need you guys for this. And so they went out and they got the most minutes. And it's like, and these are all the little things that just, they don't really need to be talked about in a group victory, right? Especially a group victory that is led by your absolute best players, Thompson, Tuck, Skinner, Dahlin, you know, having big offensive nights.
And do you know how easy that would have been for Don Granato to say, this is a big game. We got to win against Arizona. We got to win. And you know what? No, can't play you now. That used to be such a torts thing to do. I can't trust you. I can't trust you. You didn't get it done now. I can't trust you. Maybe next game. But now you're going to sit on the bench. Now, I'm not making fun of torts, but I've heard it. I've seen it. Right. And not saying that that's how he's coaching now, but he has his moments with Philly and he's set out some pretty big guys in Konechny and Hayes and whatever, this year already. Yeah. But I feel like Don's taking the complete other approach. It's about developing and about learning from certain mistakes. Now, if Quinn and Fitzgerald go back out there and on the second penalty kill, there's another goal and they're directly the reason for that goal. Well, you know, fool me once, shame on you, and fool me twice, shame on me. Well, then maybe you change your approach. But to give that player a chance, it makes a lot of difference. Now, again, they beat Colorado. That was hurting.
Yep.
They beat the Kings. That was 0-0 after two, and the Sabres couldn't do much. And they beat Arizona. So, yeah, they're on the three-game win streak. But and you can only play the team that's in front of you. I get that. But how do you take that to the next level, right? Vegas, that's, well, maybe a little step up. They're banged up a little bit. They got some injuries of their own, but let's just say Vegas maybe is a little step up. And then you got Tampa.
Vegas game, big. I mean, you can't say it yet because you have to get past Vegas to make it feel this way. But we know what has happened to them in the two games against Tampa, and it will be a very, very, very significant game, I would say.
All right, so you played Tampa on December 23rd.
Yeah.
And then you have a couple of games, Columbus, Detroit, and then you play Boston before, you know, turning the new year.
Right.
So yeah, I would say, well, I don't want you to overlook Vegas, Columbus, and Detroit, but for me, it's going to be really telling how this team plays and reacts against Tampa and Boston. So yeah, I've got those circled on my calendar for sure.
The power play's at 30%. That's worthy of circling. It really is amazing, isn't it? I mean, it's not always easy, and it's not always the same, thankfully. And I think that's part of a reason for their success. But what do you think when you hear of a 30% power play and number two in the league?
Well, I think it's a dominating power play that every time they have a chance goes on the ice and puts the other team like on tilt for 2 minutes, and then you get chances. But again, I remember when Pittsburgh pre-scouted the Sabres so well that they had a guy covering Tage Thompson, and Tage was freaking out. What do I do? He was going up to the blue line, going to the right flank, coming around. Like, he moved so much around the ice. And for two games, the power play looked miserable against Pittsburgh, right? Now it changed right away, and they went into Columbus. And, yeah, that made a big difference. But for me, I think stick to what works. You have Tage on one side who's so good. He goes back and forth with Dahlin. The one-timer goes on that. And then utilize the other side, because Dylan Cousins – is got to be a threat on the right side. And when he is, it makes a big difference, right? Because now teams can't shade on Thompson. I think for a couple of games against Pittsburgh, they tried to look to Tage, and then all of a sudden it was taken away and they panicked. Well, now they realize we got to work both sides, right? And I think the power play for me, and I remember, again, going back to 05-06, if we were tied with 5 minutes left in the game and we had a power play, I'd basically undo my chin strap, say, we're winning this game. We're going to score and we're going to close it out. Or if we went to overtime, 4-on-4 at the time, and we got a power play, go down 4-on-3, I could take my mask off and be like, we're winning, right? Because that was the type of comfort that I had with my power play back then. I bet you Craig Anderson and Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen are feeling the same way right now. If it's late in the game, they got a power play, game over, we're scoring.
Well, you hit on the goalies. Why don't we close with that or something close to that? A good week for both. And your then philosophy moving forward is?
Well, I'd like to see Craig Anderson play and play those big games that I talk about, right? Maybe you play UPL against Vegas and look, by the time you get through to Vegas, you come home, you have 3 days between the next game. But I'd like to say circle Tampa, that's a Craig Anderson game. Circle Boston, that's a Craig Anderson game. Like, there's a reason why players love him and he's playing so well and they're comfortable and they're calm with him in that. and you got to be able to play him those two games. The other three, maybe Craig Anderson plays another one in there. Great. But those two games should be his games. And Eric Comrie's back on the ice now. And there could be a situation where sooner rather than later could be back in action. So maybe you want to give UPL a couple of looks before you get back to your two regular goalies. So I'm not worried about UPL playing any of those games other than the Tampa, Boston. Those are Craig Anderson games.
Tampa's probably going to be Brian Elliott again, right?
Bring it, right? We're going to have, how old is Brian Elliott? He's got to be 37, 38.
No, he's older than that.
Is he older?
Isn't
he's not
he?
41 yet, and but anyway.
Only Craig is, we know
well,
that.
Well, no, Brian Elliott's really 52, but because he's been around for so long, but he probably plays on a different passport or whatnot, because somehow this year he's gone back in time and keeps winning. But to me, again, like Brian Elliott has played really well against the Sabres and played well this year, beating a lot of teams. So Vasilevskiy or Elliott, the key here is who's going to be stopping Stamkos and Kucherov and Point and, Brendan Hagel now. Like it's, there needs to be a,
Nick
an
Paul,
emphasis.
Anthony Cirelli. All of them. They're 13-3 in the last 16 games. So.
But there needs to be an emphasis now of saying Craig Anderson, boom, those are your two games. Mm-hmm. The rest of them will figure it out, but those are your two games.
All right. Anything else from around the league you want to check out there?
From around the league, other than the Edmonton Oilers with McDavid and Draisaitl and just doing miraculous things, as we pointed out all week, right? The way they played against Nashville and everything, losing to the Anaheim Ducks. It wasn't good. And it was Stuart Skinner and net again. And I felt like, why aren't they giving that game to Jack Campbell? Like, let's go, or let's give Campbell some games now. Let's make it happen. But they just don't have any trust in their goaltenders right now. It's going to haunt them this year. I mean, they could be out of a playoff spot before Christmas, and that would not be good in Edmonton.
Well, it is wild to see their uncertainty, the Flames' uncertainty, the Predators losing six in a row, St. Louis being back on the upswing, and they are the ultimate roller coaster team. There's a lot of stories, and obviously Vancouver in the heart of the Western Conference. Will they, in fact, tear it down and spread around some of those assets around the league here before it's all said and done? We will find out in due time, and we look forward to discussing with you then. And we, of course, will see you for pregame coverage, Sabres and Golden Knights on Monday night. We'll see you soon.